This first slide we're looking at is from the Ramona play, better known as the Ramona pageant out in California. It's near Hemet, which is about 2.5 hours back up in the mountains behind San Diego. This play started in 1923 and has played, except for the war years, each year since. Let's go past this ticket office, gift shop, and museum building and take a look at what's inside the theater. Here is the audience coming in, and if we go past that and on into the theater and go down onto the stage, we'll be looking back at the seating area, which seats 6,600 people. The audience comes in just to the left of the seating area and extends all across to the right of the picture. Sound and light control is from the back, except this is played in the daytime, and so no regular stage lighting equipment is used. They only use the lights later on in the year when they are doing some music programs. Let's move past this now and take a look at Ramona in action with an audience in the place. Here we see the Hacienda, which is the left stage, that is to the audience's right. This is the headquarters of the Spanish families, and the play tells of the Spanish girl who marries an Indian. The Indians have been put under the thumb of the Spanish, but the Americans arrive and put everybody under their thumb. And this play is a play that ends in tragedy, yet it offers hope for the future. Let's look now at the rest of the stage area in the next slide, and we see how the hills and the rocks and all of the exterior becomes part of the stage setting. Let's move on now and take a look at the entranceway to the Lost Colony, the famed Paul Green play, which started in 1937 on Roanoke Island near Manteo, North Carolina. It is actually the site of the first English settlement in North America and where the first English child was born. The colony disappeared, and a few years later, Jamestown was settled, and then Massachusetts. Let's look inside the theater and take a look at the lighting and sound control building and the place where the stage manager gives his instructions. The audience seating is just to the left. Let's look down there at the stage area in the next slide. Notice that the stage is rigged as the fort that the settlers built in the New World, although the play starts in England and the scenes move to the New World as the play unfolds. This play, too, is a tragedy, and it's interesting to note that in outdoor drama, tragedy sells more tickets than a happy ending. Note the wide main stage and the two side stages, allowing the play, being lighted at night, to play continuously from one stage area to the next, depending upon the demands of the show. But it plays off just as fast as a TV show. There are no breaks for changing scenery. There is an intermission. Most plays have one and sometimes two intermissions. Let's look at the play then. Here is the Queen's Garden scene from The Lost Colony, and the next slide takes us to the fishnet scene in the second act after the settlement has been started, and it's done under stage lights. Let's go on and take a look at the two leads, John Borden and Eleanor Dare in The Lost Colony. I see she also has baby Virginia Dare, and this was the basis of the logo and later became a symbol of The Lost Colony, the man, the woman, and the child facing out looking at the ocean. The next slide takes us to Spearfish, South Dakota, for the Black Hills Passion play, brought to America by Joseph Meyer in the 1930s. And Meyer is the producer who built this 5,600-seat amphitheater on the hillside. This is laid out much like Ramona, with the whole strip in front of the stage being adapted, in this case, to a street. Let's move in and take a look now at the street and the buildings, the center one of which can be opened up to show interior scenes. This play does about 80,000 people a summer. The Lost Colony does about 90,000. Ramona plays to 6,600 people in three weekends, six performances. Let's move past this to a closer shot of the stage area. You can see a little more of the detail at the Black Hills Passion Play, Spearfish, South Dakota. Let's look at the play being played. Oh, well, here's the rain shelter in the next slide. And across from that, we have a nursery where small children can be taken and put to bed, and their mothers can watch the play through the glass windows. Sound is piped in, and sound in the bigger amphitheaters is usually done electronically and either supported or actually reinforced with the use of the microphones. Now let's watch the Black Hills Passion Play in action. Here Christ is brought before Pilate along with the three criminals. And let's look then at the next slide. This is Joseph Meyer playing the Christus figure and the scene from the crucifixion. The next picture is the entrance to the Mountainside Theater in Cherokee, North Carolina, on the Indian Reservation, where Under These Hills has played since 1950. It plays to 100 to 120,000 people a summer. Let's go inside and look at their 2,800-seat amphitheater. We're looking down where the audience looks when it goes to be seated toward the main stage and side stages. And if we go down a little further into it, we get an idea of the spaciousness of the Mountainside Theater in Cherokee and the kind of scenic wonders that are around it. Let's look now in the next slide at a sequence from the play. The play is about the Indian Sali, who kills a soldier who was drunk and who killed Sali's wife. Sali fled to the mountains, and the soldiers, who were asked to remove the Indians to Oklahoma, in exasperation, gave all the Indians who were hiding the right to stay there if Sali and his sons would give themselves up. And in the next scene, you see that Sali did so, and Sali and his two older sons are shot in reprisal for having killed the soldier. The play, Another Tragedy, has been one of the most successful of the outdoor historical dramas, and it was Kermit Hunter's first outdoor history play. Let's look now at the next slide, which is in Dover, New Philadelphia, Ohio, where Trumpet in the Land, a play by Paul Green, has been playing since 1970. We're coming along the entranceway where the audience does, with the concession stand and gift shop and rain shelter over to the right and the entrance to the theater down to the left. Let's come down and take another look back from another area at the gift shop, the rain shelter, and concession area. Let's go on into the amphitheater and look down at the stage, where we see a main stage and two side stages that are built by fiberglass to look like a part of the surroundings. The stage is open to the hill behind, and a battle sequence is fought on the hill during one section of the play. Let's go down on the stage and look back at the seating, at the chairs, at the lighting towers, which put the light at the right angles to light the play and reinforce the features of the actors as well as illuminate them. If we look at the play in the next slide, we see rolling stages, and here is the play in action. It tells of the Moravian Indians, Christian Indians, who settled inadvertently between the English and the Americans during the Revolution. And they end up being massacred in a very infamous situation. Again, another tragedy. Something that tells us in detail about some of the not-so-good parts of our heritage, while offering us clarity and hope for the future. The next slide is from The Viking. This is in Park Rapids, Minnesota, or a few miles above Park Rapids. Beautiful 1,800-seat amphitheater. And we are out in a boat on the lake. Let's see what the play looks like in the next slide as the Vikings land and meet the Indians. Another slide shows us the Viking boat and the Indians in a little better contrast. And moving on from that, we take a look at Beckley, West Virginia. Here's the parking lot, showing cluster parking with several parking areas all connected by walks and lights. that does not destroy the park-like atmosphere in one huge concrete block. So let's look inside this amphitheater now. We're down off to the side of the amphitheater looking back at the lighting and sound control building. And if we go up and into the theater, the first play, this is a Kermit Hunter play called Honey in the Rock, is shown on stage. And moving from that to a sequence from Hatfields and McCoys by Billy Ed Wheeler. These shows are played in rep at the theater outside Beckley, West Virginia. It's located 13 miles from town and shows to about 30 to 35,000 people in an average summer. Let's go past that now and look at the amphitheater rain shelter at Horn in the West in Boone, North Carolina, where since 1952 Kermit Hunter's play Horn in the West has been playing. They play to about 28 to 30,000 people a summer. Let's look at the stage in the next slide, showing the natural area, which has grown really during the life of the play, and how the actors can come down and practically shake hands with the audience if they so desired. Note, too, metal chairs, which I might point out are not too good because they are hard to dry after a rain and because they get very cold on cool nights, and people in thin clothes know it when they sit down. The play in action in the next slide, and we have the wedding scene of the two young people who are trying to start in the mountains of North Carolina. And the story is about the American Revolution and how people made up their minds to either be for or against the revolution. The next slide is the Battle of Kings Mountain, which is very much a climactic part of the play at Boone, North Carolina. Let's move on now to another slide. This one is in Galveston, Texas, where Paul Green's The Lone Star has been the flagship for an amphitheater that also does musicals. As we look at this ticket booth and the entranceway up to the amphitheater proper, we have a dining hall off to the right and the ticket booth and offices and gift shop off to our left. Let's go through and go up and take a look at the play in action. Here, Sam Houston addresses the crowd in The Lone Star, which is about the birth of Texas as a country and then as a state. Let's take a look at another scene from The Lone Star. Here is the finale, giving you an idea with the ship that has pulled up back of the main stage, an idea of the scope of the play and how it covers the area of the main and side stages. Another picture takes us to the Stephen Foster story in Bardstown, Kentucky. The Stephen Foster story, having been played since the mid-50s in a 1,400-seat amphitheater, does about 60,000 people a summer, give or take some, and has been a leader for the development of outdoor drama in the central part of the country. Here's the end of the first act in the next slide from the Stephen Foster story by Paul Green. And another slide shows us the famed Christy Minstrel Seed. And going to another slide, we see the amphitheater, nearly all of the 1,400 seats, rain shelter, lighting locations, and lighting control in Bardstown, Kentucky. One more slide shows us the finale of the play as the steamboat has come in and docked at its pier. It is, of course, a mock-up, a fake. There is no water there. Let's move past that now on to Harrodsburg, Kentucky, where we see the entranceway to the Legend of Daniel Boone. And let's move on up into the theater, and we see the opening scene of the Legend of Daniel Boone. That, incidentally, is not the sky. It is a sky effect. The play here is not open to the air, and on the back it is an indoor sort of setting, except that those are real trees and bushes growing there. Well, let's take another look at the Legend of Daniel Boone as we see some of the Indians in a scene late in the play where they're carrying away the Indian chief who was killed in the Battle of Boonesboro. Another slide shows us the Indians as they listened to the British soldiers sent to stir up trouble between the Indians and the white settlers. The next slide takes us to Paladur Canyon State Park outside of Amarillo, Texas. Actually, it's outside of Canyon, Texas, but Amarillo is the place you mostly see on the map. We're way up on the edge of the canyon looking down at a filled amphitheater at the dressing rooms and cast buildings off to the right and to the public parking lots and entranceways off to the left. Let's go down and take a look at the play. We see an audience in there waiting for the play to start, and the next slide shows the play as seen from backstage. It is a musical based on the conflict between the cowboys and the cattlemen and the sodbusters who moved in to start farming. The next slide is just a scene from one of the dance sequences of the play, and the next slide shows us the sequence where the only time the Indians appear in the play, where Indians have returned to Paladur Canyon to bury Quanah Parker, their very popular chief. And the settlers, of course, make way and allow the Indians to go ahead and do that. That play is called Texas and has been done since 1966. The next slide is the finale from Texas, and if we keep moving, we'll very quickly be in St. Augustine, Florida, where in 1965 the Paul Green play Cross and Sword started. It's been done every year since. If we go up and into the amphitheater, we see it has about 1,800 seats, lighting towers left and right, and lights on the rain shelter roof. The play, in the next slide, we see the rain shelter in some detail, and let's go down now and see the play as it looks in action on a series of ramps, not realistic staging at all. The play also has side stages, and like most of the outdoor history plays, it plays continuously, like watching a movie or a television show, as it quickly moves from scene to scene in different locations. The next slide is simply a close-up so you can get an idea of the details of the costumes. Here, Menendez, the Spanish leader, meets the Indian chief and is introduced to the Indian chief's sister, who's offered as a bride. Let's move on now and take a look at the rain shelter and the covers on the lighting equipment. And then another slide takes us to Alaska. This is Kodiak Island, the Frank Brink Amphitheater. Frank Brink wrote the play Cry of the Wild Ram. Let's look at the concession stands of this very simple amphitheater. And if we move down to the trail to the left, we'll get a look at the theater and the way it's settled in a beautiful little area with mountain peaks and the sound out to the left. The theater has a set of buildings which make up a street. The next slide shows us those, and another slide shows us the play in action. Cry of the Wild Ram, Kodiak, Alaska, started in 1965. If we move now to the next picture, we see the amphitheater for Tecumseh at Chillicothe, Ohio. 1,800 seats, a play that's played 12 years. The play was written by Alan Eckert, a novelist, and has been staged with great success. Let's look down at the stage area where we see a main stage and two side stages. The side stages are set so they can be utilized in the play. There is a pond beyond the main stage, which is used by canoeists, and also during the battle, horseback riders ride right down into the end of the water. Let's look now at the cannon on the hillside. This play has spectacular battle effects, and here the cannon are being loaded, and they fire and the shells appear to go over the audience and strike in the Indian village on the other side stage. Let's move on from Tecumseh now to the Liberty Cart at Kenansville, North Carolina. The Liberty Cart was written by Randy Umberger, and let's go inside and look back at the amphitheater rain shelter and the lighting and sound control booth on top of the rain shelter. Seats here are brought in. The benches that were here had no backs, and they have gradually been upgrading this. This play started in 1975. Let's look at the play in action. It starts and tells of the American Revolution and continues talking about the family and the life and the community until it gets us through the Civil War. The next slide is a picture of one of the dance sequences from the Liberty Cart. Let's go on now to look at a slide being made while they were putting the plastic chairs out in the amphitheater at Tahlequah, Oklahoma. This is the site of Kermit Hunter's play, Trail of Tears, which tells the end of the story that started at Cherokee, North Carolina, on the transportation of the Cherokee Indians to Oklahoma. The reason we have this slide is because I wanted you to look at the top, where not only there is lighting equipment and sound speakers, but where air ducts dump cold air over the audience, and the air is taken out from the sides of the amphitheater and then recirculated after it's been cooled, dropping the temperature about 10 degrees, even though there is open hot air up above the theater holding the cold air down. Let's look at a couple of the scenes from the play. It features some very striking lighting and some very striking dance sequences. Notice that the backstage is finished as a cliff, which allows that really to be a hole in the ground and allows the hot air on top to hold the cold air down over the audience. The next slide is again a dance sequence from the Trail of Tears. And then another slide takes us to Indiana. This is Dale, Indiana, Lincoln's Boyhood Home State Park. And this is the gift shop and ticket booth and concession booth for the play. The amphitheater had a pavilion roof made out of metal put over it. Let's go inside and see a rehearsal going on. Here's a rehearsal from Young Abe Lincoln by Billy Ed Wheeler, a musical play about Lincoln's early life as it hinged upon what happened there in southern Indiana. It is interesting to note that most of the outdoor historical dramas take place in historical areas. In a sense, they take place on or near the hallowed ground where historical figures actually lived or where historical events actually took place. It's an important part of the reason for being of most of the outdoor historical dramas. Thank you for listening. This is Mark Sumner from the Institute of Outdoor Drama, University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill, North Carolina. Is a passageway that dumps cold air down from the back of the audience on top of the audience. This cold air is pulled out at the sides of the theater, at the sides of the seating, and is recirculated and cooled again and dumped back out. Now, the hot air of the sky up above this amphitheater holds the cold air down, and it actually reduces the temperature about 10 degrees from the temperature just outside the entranceway. Let's look at a scene from The Trail of Tears by Kermit Hunter. We see here some of the lighting, the way a cliff faces off the back of the stage and allows the hot air to hold the cold air down. This play has spectacular dance and lighting and tells the story of what happened to the Cherokee at the end of the Trail of Tears. It is the end of the story that starts at Unto These Hills in Cherokee, North Carolina. The next slide is also a dance sequence from that play. And the next slide takes us to Indiana, at Dale, Indiana, where a play by Billy Ed Wheeler called Young Abe Lincoln has been played for the last three summers. This is the ticket and concession and gift shop buildings with a amphitheater and a pavilion roof on it over to the right. Let's go inside it and take a look at how a play looks on the stage. Now, this was a rehearsal, of course, without stage lighting and with one of the wagon stages rolled on and made in the middle of the afternoon. The problem with the roof is that it changes the acoustics and makes it very difficult for all but the actors with the best articulation to be clearly understood, and they've had to solve that problem with microphones. This takes us around the various theaters, not all of them, and not all of the things that are available in the country, but it gives you a general idea of what is being done in outdoor historical drama and how it's being done. So if you have further questions, please ask when we finish this slideshow, or if you wish, write to the Institute of Outdoor Drama, University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill, Campus Box 3240, Chapel Hill, North Carolina, 27516. Thank you. Park. And we're standing on the stage looking across the level paved area of the stage toward the lighting control booth and the 1,500 seats in the theater. The rain shelter extends across the back. Let's look at the stage area. Here is a rehearsal shot giving you an idea of how the stage just simply settles back into the rim of the canyon. At one time, and let's go on to another slide, at one time there is a tremendous storm ending in a flash of lightning, and one of my friends was kind enough to capture the flash of lightning for us. For you technical buffs, that's made by a military primer cord strung down the canyon wall, and when it fires, the audience thinks the lightning really did strike them. Let's move on to a small place in North Carolina where Randy Umberger's play on the Lumbee Indians is played and has been since 1976. His play is called Strike at the Wind. It's about Henry Barry Lowry, an Indian who became an outlaw because of the treatment of the Lumbee Indians during the Civil War. And he is something of a Robin Hood who campaigned to stop the actions of hostile whites. This play has some blacks, some Indians, and some whites in the cast, and is probably a representative of more of the ethnic minority groups than one would normally see. Strike at the Wind by Randy Umberger. The next shot shows us simply the lake and a little more of the staging area where Lowry's cabin has been reproduced. It still exists in the area, and although not a show place, probably will be fixed up as one. It's usually enough to take the prospective director down and show him the bullet holes that were left in Henry Barry Lowry's house, and his enthusiasm tends to gain as he realizes he's right at the site of where these events happened. This is something that in most cases, except the religious plays, is true of outdoor drama. They create a sense of pilgrimage on the part of the visiting public. They are done by their communities, usually on a non-profit basis of everybody putting his shoulder to the wheel, and presented to people who really don't live in that area. Of course, a great many people in the area come, but they could not sustain one of these plays, even a small one, very long, unless the tourists were flocking in to see what was being done, what was being said, and what kind of entertainment it is. There is, by the way, nothing better than having a good, professionally put together play and performance. Those, of course, require that other element, the know-how to spread the information and publicity wide enough and skillfully enough to penetrate the public consciousness. It takes all three of those. The next slide takes us to another of Rennie Umberger's plays. This one is called the Liberty Cart. We're looking at the rear of the amphitheater. Let's turn and look down into the amphitheater toward the stage. About 800 seats. A very nice little theater for the Liberty Cart. The play tells of one family from just before the American Revolution to just after the Civil War, covering something like about 80 years in the life of the family. The next slide is from Beyond the Sundown in Livingston, Texas. This play is on an Indian reservation about 70 miles north of Houston. Let's note lighting and sound control and the rain shelter and a support for lights, and let's turn around and look at the play in action. We're sitting... The next slide is of Beyond the Sundown. Notice that one of the side stages is rather elevated, leading to a temple where the chiefs confer. And we're looking at the council circle, of course, with a medicine man leading a dance. We're sitting very close to the stage on the left side of the audience. The next picture from the same play shows the medicine man just a little further in that scene as he turns from first one of the Indians to another. The play is about the Alabama and Coushatta Indians who chose not to take sides in the war for Texas independence. Here some of Sam Houston's men have come to persuade the Indians to join them. The Indians do not, but they do not go to war for the Spanish either. And as a reward for not going to war against the Americans, Houston created an Indian agency and reservations for them when the time came. And this is the only state, Texas, that has state Indian commissions with reservations. The next slide is of a sequence in the play that is almost pure fantasy ballet. At one point, the chiefs, to gain advice, go down to the underworld to talk to the animal images who live underneath the earth. The medicine man leads the way and takes the audience with the use of smoke and special lighting effects and costuming right along with him. That completes this set of slides. But hopefully it will give you an idea of what our nonprofit outdoor dramas are all about and what is being done about our past history in certain parts of the country. Probably the writers who write for outdoor drama are interested in this because they got a chance to help establish knowledge and a viewpoint about events of the past to instruct the people who are living today.